Chapter 2. Obvious Side Hustles. In researching this material, I went through dozens of side hustle lists. Most mentioned the obvious side hustles that everybody knows about, such as driving for Uber or Lyft, delivering food for DoorDash, Grubhub, or Postmates, delivering groceries for Instacart and Shipt, being a freelancer on Fiverr, Upwork, or Mechanical Turk, and selling products on Amazon, eBay, Etsy, and similar sites. Another 20 are not so obvious, but are still touted by various side hustle lists, podcasts, and books. I cover them in Chapter 3. As I will explain, with few exceptions, most obvious and many not so obvious side hustles are either extremely competitive, do not pay well, are unpredictable in terms of cash flow, or all of these. Therefore, I will talk about the obvious side hustles first to get them out of the way so you can avoid wasting your time and money or at least have my opinion on their potential. However, some of the side hustles I cover have unconventional or little-known twists that can be lucrative, starting with ride-hailing. So, please absorb all the material to learn about these angles. Ride-hailing. The first obvious side hustle is ride-hailing. The two major players are Uber and Lyft. On the surface, providing rides seems like it would be worthwhile, and initially it was. But then ride-hailing became extremely competitive, and with competition came fewer trips and lower fares. I have seen news stories about how some Uber and Lyft drivers have been forced to sleep in their cars to stay near lucrative areas, such as airports, to keep expenses under control. The main flaw in today's ride-hailing services is that drivers are compelled to take rides that may not pay well. By that I mean rides that are short distance. Drivers who turn down too many rides may be offered fewer rides of any kind. So they are rolling the dice, so to speak, hoping to get rides that pay well. In other words, ride-hailing income after expenses is not only marginal, it is unpredictable. And speaking of rolling the dice, the unpublicized dirty little secret of the ride-hailing industry is the way drivers and passengers are insured. Virtually no personal auto insurance policy covers ride-hailing activities. And most, if not all, personal insurers are asking their customers about ride-hailing whenever a policy is added or upgraded. I know this because we sold a vehicle and bought a new one recently, and I was specifically asked if any of our vehicles are or will be used for ride-hailing. At the time of my reporting, Uber and Lyft provide some coverage for their drivers, passengers, and third parties. But drivers must be online with the Uber or Lyft app on to be covered. Also, and this is critical, if you use your vehicle for commercial purposes and do not tell your personal insurance carrier about it, you run the risk of them denying a claim that involves commercial use of your vehicle, and they may cancel your policy as well. Many ride-hailing drivers do have separate commercial insurance, but at the time of this reporting, there is no way of knowing. Plus, from a driver's standpoint, once you reveal that you are offering ride-hailing, your existing insurer may not want to cover you. And even if they do, if you stop ride-hailing, they may not believe you. It is a catch-22. Also, pandemic or otherwise, you have little control over who gets into your vehicle. In June 2020, I took a short Uber trip from a car repair place to home and back again. Each time, the Uber app said my driver would be wearing a mask, but did not require me to wear one. Although each driver wore a mask, neither vehicle had any kind of screen or barrier between the driver and me. I followed CDC mask and distancing guidelines during the pandemic. Fortunately, Uber and Lyft eventually instituted mandatory mask policies for passengers during the pandemic. Sidebar. As I was proofing this material, Uber and Lyft were in a legal battle with California about the status of their drivers. California wants to classify drivers as employees, while Uber and Lyft want to classify drivers as independent contractors. This is huge, because as I said before, as a side hustler, you are operating a business. As such, you can legally deduct all or part of certain expenses that would otherwise be considered personal and non-deductible. If California prevails, other states may follow. I believe this will seriously affect the viability of Uber, Lyft, and possibly delivery service companies like DoorDash, Grubhub, and Postmates. The magic of most side hustles is that you benefit from the freedom, flexibility, and tax advantages of being an independent business person and not an employee. Close sidebar. So, if you want to get into conventional ride hailing, keep these issues in mind. Little known, lucrative ride hailing twists. Here are some little-known twists on ride-hailing that I know work because I have talked with drivers who utilize them. In the years before the pandemic, my wife and I did a lot of luxury cruising, and we had to fly to cruise ports that were out of driving range. So we used Uber to take us to and from the airport. But this method was hit and miss, in that we never got the same driver twice. We couldn't be sure a driver would be available when we needed a ride, especially to the airport very early in the morning, and prices were unpredictable. So we put posts on Facebook and Nextdoor and found a reliable and reasonably priced driver outside of Uber and Lyft who became our go-to guy. We recommended him to our friends, and through word of mouth, our guy stayed busy. Being a curious fellow, I would ask our guy about his business during our airport rides, and he openly shared his experiences. He said he was moving away from conventional ride hailing in favor of more lucrative trips. He revealed that he had just taken an affluent couple up to one of the Native American casinos in Oklahoma for an early evening trip, where they paid him $500 to drive about 90 minutes each way while they gambled and took in a show. Instead of driving back, he too hung out at the casino, played the penny slots, and watched a movie in their theater. The total time spent was about 7 hours, which is around $70 per hour before expenses. Apparently, he does this about twice a month. He also shared that he had secured a contract with defense contractor L3 to ferry their executives and important guests to and from their compound some 70 miles each way to DFW Airport and Love Field. He said each trip was a $200 flat fee, which works out to around $80 per hour before expenses. He says he does this twice a week. The last time we used him for an airport trip, we noticed that he had purchased a new Kia Sportage SUV with all the bells and whistles. He told us that he had secured a contract to drive small but high-value specialty equipment items to and from Austin roughly twice a month at $1,000 per trip. Our guy must be on call to leave on short notice because the equipment is a key component for an aerospace project that must arrive exactly when required. They needed someone who was trustworthy, reliable, who could respond quickly, and could not find anyone until they found him. Before expenses, each trip grosses about $140 per hour. When we wanted to use him again for an airport trip, he told us he was too busy and referred us to one of his friends. During our first trip with our new lady driver, she told us that she, too, had secured contracts with some corporate clients to take their VIPs to and from the DFW airport and Love Field. Although she said she was still driving occasionally for Uber and Lyft, she said she was phasing that out. The lesson here is that affluent people and corporations will pay premium prices for services provided by professional, personable, and reliable people, something that is in short supply these days. So, if you have a suitable, clean, late-model vehicle and live within 75 miles of a major airport, casino, resort, or other prime destination, you might be able to offer VIP transportation services. Like our ride-hailing guy and gal, be sure to get commercial insurance. By the way, several of the Uber drivers we used told us they also drove for Lyft. So, while you are building your specialty ride-hailing business, you might want to do that too. Restaurant food and grocery delivery. These delivery services have popped up in the last few years. The major food delivery players are DoorDash, Grubhub, Postmates, and Uber Eats. And the major grocery delivery players are Instacart and Shipt. And like ride hailing, all are competitive and unpredictable in terms of cash flow. Restaurant food delivery has its obvious prime time, dinner time, and does not require a large capacity, late model, or spotlessly clean vehicle. During the pandemic, we have used DoorDash a couple of times a week. We get free delivery on a $10 or more purchase using our Dash Pass. It costs about $10 a month. It pays for itself after about 3 orders per month. DoorDash has a great app that shows at least 30 restaurants in our area and their menus. After purchase, the app confirms the order and shows where our Dasher is, on the way to the restaurant and on the way to our home, with estimated time of arrival. It is great for us, but not so great for the Dashers, I suspect. In over 24 orders, we have not had the same Dasher twice, to my knowledge, which indicates that either the jobs are extremely competitive or that Dashers come and go. According to Indeed.com, DoorDash drivers reported earnings in 2020 of around $13 to $18.50 per hour before expenses. So, let's try to reverse engineer those figures. According to DoorDash, a Dasher makes base pay of $2 to $10 per order depending on time, distance, and desirability, plus promotional pay based on peak times, unspecified challenges, and drive pay for special but unspecified situations, plus 100% of tips. Our DoorDash orders run between $20 and $40 before tax and tip. So, how much can DoorDash pay a driver out of, say, a $30 order so that they and the restaurant also make money? Not much. Although DoorDash does not disclose their commission rates openly, reportedly, they can vary between 10 to 25% depending on certain undisclosed factors. According to one source, the typical rate of commission taken from restaurants by DoorDash is around 20%. So, in our example, a $30 order pays DoorDash $6. In our experience, the DoorDash app offers $4, $5, and $6 tip options with the ability to pay a different amount. Since the $5 option is selected by default, that is what we usually pay. In our experience, it takes the Dashers 25 to 45 minutes to accept the order, drive to the restaurant, pick up the food, and deliver it to us. So, in our case, if DoorDash gets $6 from the restaurant and pays the Dasher 50% or $3 plus a $5 tip, That equals $8 for 25 to 45 minutes. Let's say that's about 30 minutes on average, or about $16 per hour. If, and it's a big if a driver got back-to-back trips from, say, 5 to 10 p.m., that driver would gross $16 per hour times 5, or around $80 per night before gas and other vehicle expenses. If drivers could do this 5 nights a week, week in and week out, they would gross around $1,700 a month. That's if DoorDash paid them 50% of the restaurant commission, which is unlikely, and if they were booked solid, 5 hours a night, 5 nights a week, which is also unlikely. $1,700 a month before expenses could be a decent supplemental income, but it is hardly a living wage. Delivering groceries through one of the major players will pay you about the same, about $14 per hour, according to Glassdoor, except that you will probably need a larger vehicle and a strong back. Instacart. Note that the following Instacart data is as of the time of this report, fall 2020, and is subject to change. Instacart is an online grocery delivery service company that works with local stores to deliver groceries to your door. Instacart has store relationships in many cities across the U.S. Depending on the store and the items you're purchasing, most are either the same price or have a slight markup. It will say on the Instacart website whether or not you can expect higher prices by shopping through their site. If you spend over $35 and opt for regular delivery, over 1 hour, then the delivery fee is $5.99. Under $35 is $9.99, but it's easy to spend over $35. 1 hour delivery is $7.99 or $11.99. If you buy an Instacart Express membership for $99, then over $35 orders will not incur a delivery charge. Under $35 is $9.99. Instacart offers two levels for delivery personnel: full service shopper and in-store shopper. Full service shoppers are independent contractors who shop for and deliver groceries. They must be able to work an unlimited number of hours per week, and positions are available wherever Instacart operates. In-store shoppers are part-time employees of Instacart and provide in-store shopping only, meaning no delivery. They must work at least 15 to 20 hours a week, including Sundays or Mondays. They do qualify for benefits, including a 401k plan. In addition, temporary in-store shopper jobs are available in many areas to help meet increased demand. These temporary positions are expected to last 90 days. Like ride-hailing services, Instacart requires a background check. Full-service shoppers also need a valid driver's license and proof of insurance. In-store shoppers are assigned shifts each week and manage their shifts via the shopper app. An in-store shopper can expect to work up to 29 hours per week. Full-service shoppers make their own schedules. Using the app, they look for orders that are up for grabs or can be notified when an order is available. A shopper's average customer star rating and delivery time can influence the orders they see. Shoppers can review the store location, number of items, and estimated payment before accepting an order. Using the app, in-store and full-service shoppers are required to update their progress, noting any changes or refunded items, so that customers can track their orders. When shoppers have filled the order, they check out with a preloaded debit card provided by Instacart. Full-service shoppers are also responsible for delivering the order to a customer's home. How Instacart shoppers are paid. The way shoppers earn money is determined by their classification. In-store shoppers are paid a fixed hourly wage that varies by location. Full-service shoppers' pay depends on the order, Instacart provides an estimate of potential earnings for every order and guarantees shoppers will earn at least $5 for each delivery-only batch and $7 to $10 for each shop and deliver batch. According to Instacart's shopper app, pay depends on the number of items, type of items, driving distance, and effort involved in shopping and delivering. A larger order, which tends to be heavier, will likely result in more compensation than a small shopping job. And the earning potential is usually higher when customer demand spikes. So working on Sundays and during popular events like the Super Bowl can mean more money. Full-service shoppers can also earn tips when making deliveries. In-store and full-service shoppers are paid weekly via direct deposit to a checking or savings account. After completing 5 batches, full-service shoppers can use instant cash-out, an immediate transfer to a debit card, to access their earnings more quickly. After that, they can cash out at any time, up to 5 times a day, as long as they have at least $5 in earnings, subject to a $3,000 daily limit. Full-service shoppers are considered independent contractors and must make estimated quarterly tax payments. Part-time employees have their taxes withheld. According to Medium.com, Instacart shoppers made $11 to $16 per hour on average in 2020. According to Mashed.com, Instacart earnings are difficult to estimate, since their pay rate is based on variable factors, such as the size of the delivery, number of items, weight, and distance traveled. Also, tips play a significant role but depend entirely on the mood, generosity, and financial state of the person ordering groceries. Furthermore, an order can be canceled right up until delivery. And there's also the possibility of tip baiting, where customers promise enormous tips, then change the amount to zero after delivery. According to Indeed.com, Instacart shopper earnings, including tips, average $14.64 per hour. You may be one of the fortunate shoppers who lands a sufficient number of decently paid batches and lucks out with generous tippers. Or you could wind up underpaid, frustrated, fed up, and looking for a new gig. YMMV. Shipt. Shipt is like Instacart. Customers place orders and shoppers respond via an app. Experienced Shipt shoppers can make anywhere from $16 to $22 an hour. Shoppers get paid per shop, so the more they shop, the more they earn. Shipt shoppers also keep 100% of their tips, and Shipt encourages customers to tip. So, shoppers can make more by providing exceptional service. But as with Instacart, Shipt shoppers are subject to the whim of the customer and might not get any tip. To break it down, Shipt pays a commission and starts each order at $5. Then, there is a 7.5% commission of the total order amount added to your pay. For example, if you pick up an order that totals $150, you will be paid a total of $16.25. If you read reviews at Indeed.com, you'll find that many Shipt and Instacart shoppers started out with high hopes, but found the realities of grocery shopping were less than desirable. Sidebar. In my quest to give you twists and angles that can make a side hustle more profitable, almost by accident, I discovered Dumpling. One of the problems with Instacart, and possibly Shipt, is that some of the shoppers are lazy and incompetent. On 2 occasions during the summer, separate shoppers left our order at the bottom of our entrance stairway and did not even bother to ring our doorbell, let alone hand the items to us. Both times, the delivery window kept changing, so I didn't know the exact delivery time until about an hour after the fact. Since the temperature was in the high 90s, the frozen items thawed and the perishable items were spoiled. I had to take the items back to Kroger. But since Instacart keeps the receipts, I had to beg the customer service lady to accept the items back and issue me a store gift card. My wife complained to Instacart, and we got a partial credit for both orders. But the hassle of having to go to the store and wait in their customer no service line was hardly worth the amount of the credit. Although we usually tip the shoppers generously, those two shoppers got a zero tip. As I was entering the store, I noticed a lady with a cart full of groceries paused near the entrance. She seemed to be reviewing some receipts. When I saw her Instacart badge, I asked her about the receipts, because we never get a receipt with our Instacart order. To protect her privacy, I will call her Mary. She said that they keep the receipts as proof of purchase, because payment is made to the store by Instacart, who charges the customer separately. She told me to complain to Instacart and said they would make it right, which they did. A few days later, I was in my car leaving Kroger, and I happened to see Mary loading her car and pulled over to see if I could talk with her about her work. Initially, she said she was too busy, but then she succumbed to my charm and told me about Dumpling. Incredibly, I was actually listening to the audio of this book in my car to proof it before submitting it for publication. After hearing Mary's story, I updated the written and audiobooks to include it. According to TechCrunch.com, Dumpling.us launched in the summer of 2020 to challenge the status quo in the gig economy by giving more ownership to the workers that power it. Dumpling connects shoppers to all the resources they need to migrate off the Instacart and Shipt platforms and start their own personal shopping business. Dumpling helps users create their own LLCs. Then it offers a slew of assorted products, including a Dumpling credit card to help shoppers buy groceries before customer payment, an app to help centralize deliveries and customer communication, and a forum for mentorship and worker support. According to Dumpling, shoppers primarily acquire customers through marketing and self-promotion when dropping off orders for other delivery apps. Some customers have recently started going directly to Dumpling to look for shoppers to order from in their area. Dumpling gives 100% of tips to business owners. Unlike Instacart, Dumpling allows business owners to pick their tip options and set a personal default tip minimum. There is also space for customers to leave reviews. The company makes money in a few different ways. It charges shoppers a one-time $10 fee to set up, which includes a Dumpling credit card, a listing on the website, and a shopper search tool. The platform then charges shoppers either a $39 monthly fee or a $5 per transaction fee for each time they book a job. On the other end, customers pay 5% on top of orders for payment processing. Dumpling claims that users make $33 in average earnings per order, which is at least twice as much as Instacart and Shipt shoppers make. According to Mary, she uses Instacart as her base service and then tells selected customers about Dumpling. By selected, she means customers that appear to be willing to pay a premium price for outstanding personal service. Although she did not give me an exact number, she says that she is a full-time shopper and makes a comfortable living. She also told me that she has acquired a handful of direct customers that pay her twice what she makes via Dumpling. Dear listener, this is proof of my experience that customers will pay premium prices for premium service. So, you might want to try Instacart or Shipt for lead generation as Mary does. It could be that you too can make a comfortable living as a personal shopper. Close sidebar. So the bottom line with conventional ride-hailing and delivery gigs is that the income is modest and unpredictable, but might get you through the lean times. The key is to seek out direct customers who may need delivery of groceries and other items on a regular basis. Or they may need rides to the airport, leisure destinations, the doctor, or other places. Freelance sites. Virtually every side hustle list includes freelance sites like Fiverr.com, Upwork.com, and Amazon's Mechanical Turk, MTurk.com. On the plus side, sites like these get a lot of traffic from potential buyers. But because freelance sites are perceived to offer low rates, most buyers who use freelance sites have a low price mentality. This is especially true for Fiverr.com, which got its name by initially offering gigs of all kinds for $5 back in 2010. This was great for buyers, but not great for sellers. Yet it was amazing what people would do for $4, $5 less Fiverr's 20%. But since many, if not most, of Fiverr sellers were and still are based outside the U.S., where $4 can be significant money, Fiverr has thrived. Millions of people have used Fiverr, including me from time to time. So thousands of people have made some money as Fiverr sellers. Fast forward to the present, and Fiverr has come a long way. Now, most of the $5 gigs are for simple tasks. Smart Fiverr sellers have realized the power of the upsell, and most offer upgrades for faster service, changes, and more complex work. It is not uncommon for some Fiverr gigs to sell for $50 or more. I have seen some for $500 or more. Sounds great, you say? Not so fast. As with ride hailing and grocery delivery, the C word has reared its ugly head. That's C for competition. In most categories on Fiverr, the competition is fierce, so much so that it is difficult to stand out, especially for a newcomer. This is because Fiverr uses a system that shows the number of gigs and ratings for all its sellers. Depending on the category, there may be dozens, even hundreds of sellers, and many of them will have hundreds of completed gigs with high ratings. As of this reporting, Fiverr has a Pro Verified rating that, according to the site, offers high-quality, easy-to-find, verified professional sellers who have been through a vetting process. And you can apparently apply to be a Fiverr Pro even if you are just starting out. There is apparently no application fee, but it's not clear exactly how their vetting process works. But even if you are an expert at what you do, and even if you are a Fiverr Pro, how can you stand out from highly rated, pro-verified, and regular sellers with hundreds of gigs to show? The answer is you can't, at least not quickly and easily, which means you might want to think twice before becoming a Fiverr seller. Perhaps the most frustrating aspect of Fiverr selling is that even though Fiverr collects the money from buyers up front when the order is placed, it can take up to 2 weeks to get paid after an order is delivered to and accepted by the buyer. In my opinion, trying to make serious money on Fiverr will be a frustrating waste of time for most U.S.-based side hustlers. Mechanical Turk is like Fiverr and similarly, in my opinion, is probably a waste of time for U.S.-based freelancers. Upwork.com, Guru.com, Freelancer.com, and comparable sites are somewhat different than Fiverr and Mechanical Turk in that the scope of work offered is more complex and, theoretically, the quality of the providers is higher. The work is more project-oriented than task-oriented. I have hired a couple of programmers using Upwork. The process is straightforward. I posted my gigs and waited for responses. Because I set a budget and had my payment source verified, I received many bids, whose prices varied widely. I had to sort through dozens of contenders, meaning people competing for my business. There's the C word again. In both cases, I selected freelancers based in Eastern Europe. They were not inexpensive, around $50 an hour. They completed the work as promised, and both gigs ended up costing me around $2,500. Even though $2,500 is a lot of money in Eastern Europe, I was not a long-term, repeat customer. So, even if you do great work, on time, and at reasonable prices, there's no way to predict how much work you'll get. I look at freelance sites the way I look at job search sites, like Career.com, Indeed.com, and Monster.com. Far too many people competing for far too few jobs. Therefore, I recommend that you look for direct customers in places where the C word is less of a factor. Selling products on Amazon, eBay, Etsy, and similar sites. Let's start with Amazon. At first glance, you might think that selling products on Amazon would be an easy way to make money. Initially, it was. But then the C word reared its ugly head, and selling on Amazon has become increasingly more and more competitive, meaning much more difficult to get a foothold and make consistent profits. A complete discussion of Amazon selling is way beyond the scope of this material, but suffice it to say, it is tough to make a profit. Not only is there very transparent price competition, but Amazon wants its cut of every sale. So, you either must sell small but consistent amounts of something with a huge profit margin, which is not likely, or you must sell large amounts of something with a smaller profit margin. The reason that it is unlikely to sell small but consistent amounts of a product at a high profit margin is because once you do, the vultures will circle and start to pick away at your business. And if you are super successful, Amazon may start competing with you. And just as with the freelance sites, not only must you compete on price, you must also compete on reputation, the number and ratings of reviews. This makes it difficult for newcomers. Not impossible, but difficult. But here is the most troubling reason why selling on Amazon can be a bad idea. Amazon can shut you down at any time for any reason without notice. And once they do, it can be difficult or impossible to get reinstated. To read about this, do a Google search for Amazon Shut Me Down. I did this recently and got 230 million results. This is an example of what I said at the start of the first chapter. One is the most dangerous number in business. The same holds true for eBay and Etsy. When eBay started, it seemed like a great idea. Imagine an online marketplace where you could buy just about anything via an auction process. But my concept of an auction was not the same as eBay's. In my mind, auction means buying at low prices. But I found that was not the case in my experience. So I have only used eBay a few times since its inception to buy a hard-to-find computer part or audio component at a fixed buy-now price. At the time, I had no choice. Then came Amazon, where 99% of the time I can buy what I want and have it as soon as the next day. And Amazon's return policy is second to none and leaves eBay and just about every other online retailer in the dust. While it is possible to sell used clothing and household items on eBay, these are one-time sales. If you want to raise money quickly, Craigslist, Nextdoor, and certain neighborhood Facebook groups can accomplish this faster and with no fee. Etsy started as an online arts and crafts marketplace, but now offers outdoor and garden items, self-care and other items, even face masks. I heard an interview with a side hustler who sold temporary tattoos to bachelorette party guests on Etsy. She bought them for 20 cents and sold them for $2, usually one to two dozen at a time. She had to order the stock, then package and ship the orders to her customers. She said that she made about $1,200 profit doing this in her first year. Hardly worth the effort, in my opinion. Apparently, she agreed, because she moved on to selling downloadable scavenger hunt kits for $5. She created the kit designs herself and listed them on Etsy, which, at the time of this report, costs just 20 cents per listing. Since the kits are downloadable for the buyer to print, her marginal costs are what her credit card processor charges, which is usually around 3%. So the good news is her sales are mostly profits, and she can set it and forget it. This is the ideal passive income scenario. But how many kits does she have to sell to make a decent side income? You can do the math, but the answer is a lot. I just went to Etsy and searched for scavenger hunts, and there were 48 listings from different sellers on the first page alone. And her company did not show up until the middle of page 3. There's the C word again. Most of the listings look similar, so it seems like the only way to compete is on price, which savvy side hustlers avoid like the plague. Do you want to compete mostly on price at low profit margins? Meaning, do you want to be a commodity? I know I don't, which is why I will give you the magic C-word-destroying formula later on. The key to long-term success in any side hustle is repeat sales or line expansion sales or both. This is difficult to do on eBay because eBay shoppers are not reliable repeat buyers, and each line expansion, meaning each different product, will require a separate store to draw any traffic. Same with Etsy and Amazon, although I will say that I have bought several products on Amazon several times, like Mexican vanilla that I first bought in Cozumel while on a cruise, and the giant-sized Mrs. Dash spice blend. But I only buy those every 2 to 3 months. The vanilla is about $10 and the Mrs. Dash is about $14. So how much can those retailers be making after Amazon takes its cut? How many units do they need to sell to make even a living wage? To be a successful side hustler, you must offer a premium-priced product or service with a high profit margin and a more frequent buying cycle. Sidebar. In the interest of completeness, if you really want to learn all about selling on Amazon, I highly recommend Jim Cockrum's program at provenamazoncourse.com. This is a no-bull, no-hype course that gives you everything you need to take the plunge. I bought a membership a few years back, but decided against selling on Amazon. But that doesn't mean you couldn't be successful. Your mileage may vary. YMMV. Close sidebar.